And you will arrive just in time to be able to do the safety briefing. Thank you, Councilor Gonzalez, for doing the safety briefing today.
Got it. Hello, everyone. Feliz Año. Happy New Year. Please. I'll now ask Councilor Gonzalez to provide a safety briefing. Please note that we're on the third floor of the building. In the event of a fire or fire alarm, please exit out through the door in the northeast corner of this room, go down the steps to the second floor, and exit through the main entrance by the reception desk. We will meet you in the courtyard outside that entrance. In the event of a medical or fire emergency, please call 911 and notify the security agent at the front desk. The nearest defibrillator is mounted on the steps leading from the reception desk down to Grand Avenue. A fire extinguisher is located in the corridor along the side of the dais just behind the wall.
Thank you. Okay, so we usually have very pressing issues, and a lot of the issues that normally rise to the top to get discussed by us are very difficult, but I do have a question for you all. Why are there 11 seats still up at the dais with all those mics when there are only seven of us? Anybody? Because I think they're ghost counselors.
I have a potential bad answer.
Okay.
Occasionally, some other body besides us uses that dais. At least once in my career, I have sat there as a member of JPAC for a public hearing.
Right? Yeah, yeah. I remember those times, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 20
That's
years ago.
That's the only answer I have for that, why that would be.
All right. It's just weird.
Change is hard.
I'm just going to suggest that maybe we can remove the chairs of the ghost counselors when we're not using. Obviously, keep the mics because we may need them for future bigger discussions, not bigger councils, but bigger other folks that are using. I think that's appropriate, but it kind of looks weird to have ghost chairs. After I noticed it, it became even worse in my head. So maybe we can do that. So I appreciate that the discussion at this level, on the number of chairs, and the background. We have a pretty heavy discussion to have right now, but I think it's been made a lot easier by everybody in the region coming to somewhat of a consensus. Our first work session topic is the Regional Investment Strategy, Transportation Investment Measure, and we've got Andy Shaw and Margie Bradway here to walk us through a conversation on how to get to the next step, what questions we have, and what additions we have. Good afternoon, and thank you so much for a well-run public hearing last night to everybody who was involved in that. A round of applause for everybody. And thank you to everybody who came out.
All right, here we go. Oh, wow.
Mr.
Shaw. I've already advanced. I'm sorry. Hi, Andy Shaw, Director of Government Affairs at Metro. And
Margie Bradway, Deputy Director of the Planning Department at Metro.
So I would second that thanks to staff who helped put together an excellent process last night to allow the public to come in and share their views on the emerging transportation measure. We are here to hopefully use this work session to get your direction, high-level direction, on a package of investments that have come out of the task force process. As the council president said, nearly unanimously, the vast bulk had unanimous consensus. There's also one project that had majority support above three-fourths, and another project that had majority support but not a formal recommendation. So we'll walk through those pieces. But I think our goal is to get high-level direction from you on what to move forward with, and Margie will describe in just a minute the purposes of that. We want to share some of the additional task force feedback that we received with you, although you've also received written minutes from our contractor who's facilitating the process on some of that feedback and high-level feedback in addition to what we present today. So before we dig in, we thought it'd be helpful to show you this video. Josh Romanis on our staff went on many of the tours and interviewed local investment team members this summer and captured some of their sense of what occurred and their role in it. And we thought it was just a helpful reminder of all the work that went into the local investment team process prior to our discussion today. So let's roll it. Thank you. we're rolling.
All right, here we go.
We are participating in the decision-making process by presenting our realities.
We're trying to think ahead 10 or 20 years.
Oops. Technical difficulties.
So what we decide now is going to have a pretty significant impact on our community, our kids, and the large numbers of people who are moving into this area.
That's okay, we've heard it.
What drives me is that, number one, I really believe that we cannot make decisions in a vacuum. It's not a technical exercise. There's always the people element, and the people element for this particular aspect of things is equity and safety.
If we do not create a very sound network of transit and transportation options, how are we ever going to address affordability, sustainability, climate change?
We're not only speaking for ourselves personally, but of all the people that we know and live with, our neighbors, you know, our friends, our families, we do count. And without us voicing them, how are the decision makers being able to incorporate our perspectives?
A lot of this comes down to that for a long time it's just not been a priority for local governments to ensure that we have good, safe bicycle infrastructure and good and safe pedestrian infrastructure. And it's pushed me to get involved in local politics, and it's pushed me to get involved in the LIT team.
My ideal would be that ultimately that we can improve safety and make sure that our most marginalized populations are served and served well.
It was great for me to learn about people who, again, live in a different part of Portland than me, have different experience than me. It's something that I generally had an idea about, but until you hear the stories firsthand about how difficult it is to get to their bus stop or how difficult it is to cross the street without worrying about being killed, that really, it resonates with you. It resonated with me.
It wasn't necessarily about widening streets or freeway expansions or things like that. But it's like, how do we invest more deeply in the people and, efficient ways of moving folks around?
I'm enjoying this part of being able to represent my entire community, because it's not one community's issue, right? The transportation and accessibility and all, it's not just for one person. At the end of the day, it touches every single person's life.
So we thought that was a really good representation of some of the experience and all the work that was put in. It was amazing to reflect on the fact that that was actually just a two-month period of time this summer for all of those of you who joined the tours and some of the meetings. A lot of work, a lot of commitment by members of our community. Also should report that some of those same members who got involved this summer have subsequently been recruited to join local government committees or boards. So they got a taste for involvement and got roped into other activities, which is exciting. So with that, I'll turn it over to Margie.
You seem to be stuck.
Yeah, Craig, can we?
Okay.
I don't know.
Sorry.
Give up on technology.
The next slide, I can start talking. So I just really putting into context the direction that you're giving today, and it is a direction for. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it's a direction to proceed with really four things, but they're all related. First is further project development. Project development is underway. We're working closely with our partners. Our partners are working very hard. But the farther along we are in project development, the more we can manage the risk. The second piece of that is we are working on a risk assessment report. Our consultants are working on it. It'll be due by the end of February, beginning of March. Well, they'll identify risks in the project, and they will also make recommendations regarding our cost estimates and contingencies. Related to that, between now and May, we'll be working with our partners to identify project delivery issues, which hopefully we work through and end up with letters of commitment from our partners to deliver these projects before it refers. So we're not negotiating IGAs, but we are asking for a letter of commitment. And then very lastly, as we get closer to spring, that will be all folded into an expenditure plan that talks about how the funds will flow between us and our partners, both for the corridors and the programs. So we're at the tip, but when you give direction today, we'll start that first piece, that project development, and again, informing the risk.
So, again, Craig did email to you the minutes from the December 18th task force meeting that describe some of the additional feedback that we got from the task force in addition to the recommendation, the formal recommendations and the informal recommendation. But a few points we wanted to highlight for purposes of the discussion. And you heard some of this in some of the testimony last night as well. But we heard from task force members a call for ongoing information and analysis of how the overall package will advance goals in climate, in VMT reduction, and racial equity. And we've already formed teams that we're beginning to work over the holidays and into January to dive into all of that work. So we've brought you some high-level answers, but we're working on, now that we're getting towards more of a finalized list, how we dive into all of those analytics and ensure that you and the task force, as we continue to analyze these projects, have all the information that we possibly can. So more details to come on that, but we've got teams actively working with our research center to give you the best information that we can along the way. The second major area was about programs. We've got our programs board back up here. Was a very strong desire to send you the message that a significant investment in the program area is very important to the task force. And the little concern is they were adding costs to the overall recommendation from where the staff recommendation started, that didn't somehow diminish the conversation around programs and diminish the resource that could be brought forward to invest in those program areas. So I want to make sure that you heard that. And that if and when we get to a point of needing to reconcile between the reality of how much resource is available and the costs of projects overall, that we're continuing to keep the region-wide programs as an important element of the overall proposal. The last area I wanted to note was the notion of balance, that as you look at this recommendation today, as we think about the programs, as we get through to that moment of potential reconciliation, that maintaining a regional balance, maintaining a balance amongst many of the values was important to many members of the task force. So both from a geographic point of view, not leaving any part of the region behind in that process, but also from balancing the various priorities that you and the task force have voiced over time.
Andy, when you talk about balancing, I think we have three priorities that the council set at the beginning.
Councilor Stacey, why don't you pull this down?
So, yeah, guilty as charged. I don't see those as trade-offs, but as essentials, the three equity, climate, safety. When you talk about balancing priorities, are you talking about those, or are you talking about internal subordinate priorities?
So climate, equity, and safety, I think, have emerged as very strong high-level thematics for both you and for the task force. When we started this off a year ago, you gave us direction on a longer list of priorities and spelled out over a couple pages how do we address growth, how do we improve the economy, how do we ensure mobility, how do we increase access to transit, a large variety of goals for the measure, and those were endorsed by and added onto by the task force in their process. ensuring that we were bringing a racial equity lens to the process, and so on. There was a pretty lengthy list of values. And we kept those up on a board at most of our task force meetings as we worked through the corridor process and the program development process. So that's the larger list that I'm speaking to.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other questions on that, additional feedback from the task force? Okay. So things have changed between the staff Tier 1 recommendations and the task force Tier 1 recommendations. In the staff recommendation, we laid out sort of a distribution of funds throughout the region, and we pulled out of that at the top, just as a staff analysis, projects that we felt like had a real regional impact that cut across boundaries and that had an impact across the entire region. And so that represents the biggest one in that is the Southwest Corridor with a substantial investment to draw down federal match. That's about 35% now. Is that right? That can't be right. It is about 35% of the overall investment. So when you pull that out and then look at how do the remaining funds get distributed between the counties, it's about 25% into Clackamas, 45% into Multnomah, and 30% into Washington County. Those figures are close to, but not the same as the share of population in each county. We thought it was helpful to reflect on where we'd started with the staff recommendation and where we ended up. You can see all of the, except for the regional projects, all of the funding going out to projects in the specific counties has gone up, and probably the most substantial is in Clackamas County. So unless there's questions on that. So we showed you this slide before when we came. Oh, yes.
I have some general questions, and part of it has to do with the money, but part of it it's the projects as well. And it would be helpful at some point if you would kind of, at least for me, it would be helpful if you would just kind of define how the task force recommendation differed from the original staff recommendation,
right.
Both in terms,
yeah.
Mostly in terms of what projects were added or just what was different and that made it add up to more money.
Mm-hmm. Actually, that's on this slide.
Yeah, and I suspect you're going to address that, but I wanted to make sure that you understood that that's kind of a basic question that I've got.
Okay.
Do you want to
Sure, I can work through this. So the theme in terms of what was added between the staff recommendation and the task force recommendation was in general more of safety and ATC, transit. And when the staff did the exercise, we were really trying to prioritize and be somewhat fiscally constrained. So I just want to highlight that. We did not constrain our task force. And that's for the reason we explained, because our revenue is a moving target, therefore the costs are a moving target. So the majority of the increase, they wanted, really the direction was transit everywhere. And so we added in, of course, where it technically made sense and where it was needed, transit improvements, like I said last time, on 12 of the 13 corridors kind of ramped up and added more funding to transit. We also, across the board, increased funding for any potential safety project, added in sidewalks, added in extra crossings. And then we heard loud and clear from the task force they also wanted trails in. So that's Trolley Trail and Council Creek Trail. And then I would say probably in terms of dollar amount, probably the biggest shift was the shift in Sunrise. Our original proposal was only funding project delivery for Sunrise, and the Highway 212 design wasn't fully formed yet. But also the Highway 212 Complete Street project was not in the staff recommendation at all. So that jumped from 70 to 180 total. And I can walk through that project and the changes to those. So that in general, I think there's other nuances in there, but those are all the big ticket items.
So you may recall the process was back in October. Was it October? We issued a staff recommendation after all the lit work and all the corridor analysis and the work with local jurisdictions and the risk analysis. We issued our staff report of recommendations to start the conversation. We then invited task force members to suggest amendments, and so they could add additional elements that hadn't been recommended that came out of the LIT process. They could suggest removing projects. They could suggest adding projects or increasing the investment in certain projects. So generally, what rose to the top in the discussion the task force had was anywhere that we can advance further enhanced transit corridors or make safety improvements, we would like to see that. So staff did amazing work in a short period of time to analyze what would the costs look like to achieve that that the goal of that amendment. And when we brought forth the proposed amendments in a packet to the task force, that's where the costs for those additions came from. And then some were simpler, like the Reed bike ped overcrossing, the trolley trail bridge, and the Council Creek Trail all had costs developed over the summertime. So those were also put on the table. And then you may recall, with the task force, we suggested, the co-chairs suggested them voting for the bulk of the package that seemed to have consensus, and then having discussions about the items that seemed to have some controversy or where there was a suggestion to remove or change a project as opposed to adding. So that's where you got that picture with all the green cards held up, the unanimous agreement around the overall bulk of the package, and walked through the other elements. I think we shared this last week, but the conversation around Sunrise and 212 was a real back and forth. There were a couple different motions that failed, motions that got amended, and then eventually a motion was made, and it also passed with unanimous consensus for the investment in 212 and the amount that you see up here. And then I should go to the next slide. Then we had a conversation about Airport Way and 82nd and that project. And there were a couple, again, some good dialogue back and forth, an amendment made that failed, an amendment made that passed. And the thing that seemed to gain some support was adding to the proposed project that the port would lead in the planning and design for this Killingsworth-Alderwood path. And with that, we got to a 75% support for the project. So that's a formal recommendation included. But it's not unanimous. There were a couple of votes against that. And then we moved on to the Clackamas to Columbia corridor and the new correct connector road, where there had been a couple different amendments suggesting removing elements or changing elements. And again, we had a really good, robust discussion amongst the various members. And in the end, there was a majority. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. A majority support from the task force, but we didn't achieve the 3/4 level to include it in the formal recommendation to you. So we brought it to you to seek your guidance on that as a separate item.
Can I ask a quick question? Thank you. I know in former work sessions we've talked to a great extent about transit readiness in developing areas across the region, but also about the value for enhanced transit corridors and really the nuance between what kind of treatments that we apply to different corridors of the region. Could you just talk a little bit more about the significance of enhanced transit corridors and how that pops up and throughout different corridors for both the council and for guests?
Sure. I was hoping we had that wonderful graphic that showed, and I know I've brought it to this committee before, but I look at a good graphic that kind of shows low, medium, high treatments. At the most kind of minimum for improving transit, you have transit signal parties. That's when the signals talk to the buses and allow the buses to come through. You also have kind of new strategic areas where you give buses priority. That might just be a small lane in an intersection or in the middle of an intersection that allows the bus to go through faster. On the kind of other end of that spectrum, the most robust treatment for enhanced transit is taking an entire lane. So that's the BAT lanes, which is business access to transit. Lane is kind of in the middle. Usually BAT lanes go for half a block or full block. On several of our corridors, we are looking at a scenario where we're looking at full lanes. 82nd is the one where that's been discussed the most. For this measure, we're not deciding on a final treatment for ETC on those corridors where we think we can leverage federal funds. 82nd and potentially TV Highway, we can go through an FTA process. The FTA process requires us to go through an EIS with different scenarios. So we're keeping for our big ETC treatments several scenarios, but I would say robust scenarios on the table. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank
okay.
You.
So we were hoping to have Council President, lead discussion amongst the council on the overall recommendation. And I think the suggestion was we could try the same exercise that we did. Take one each.
Everybody gets a green, yellow.
Green if they want.
No, you have
you
to
take as
green,
many as you
yellow,
want,
red.
Just don't hold up one. Or we'll only count one that you hold up.
We'll recycle and use the card.
So as this is going around, I guess I'd like to just focus on what was the consensus vote in terms of the package and see if there are any comments about what was in there that we still need questions answered or projects that didn't get in there. We can table those at the end.
You'll have enough to go around.
Lynn has all the yellows.
Oh, she's still working. Okay.
I do?
I have two.
I'm always the moderator.
Do I not get Christine a middle? The middle?
He always going to get a lot of juice, let's face it.
All right.
Somebody
give you exactly half a mind.
Yeah.
So I half a mind.
Yeah. Maybe someone go. No, yeah. Maybe someone's colorblind.
No, we'll split because we're the leadership.
Good leadership.
There you go. All right. So when it comes to the overall package that had unanimity, are we green, yellow, or red? Why don't you hold up your cards?
And we're talking about in terms of just moving forward with the recommendation.
Yeah, the full unanimous package, not the projects that had a majority vote that we still need to discuss. Those we can talk about next.
Okay. So we're going to vote on everything now and then get into discussion.
Well, we're not voting. We're seeing where we're at.
Well,
yeah.
Consensus.
Yes. And the question is, for the complete package that had a unanimous vote, are we green, yellow, or red? And those with yellow will discuss your issues.
Those components that have total consensus.
Yes.
Yes.
And moving those forward. Whether we move
there they are. It wasn't me.
Whether we're moving them forward, or whether we want to have some more discussion around that.
Can't hear the discussion over here, sorry.
So if the question is for the unanimous package, we're just having a temperature vote. Are we good with the unanimous package? With green, do we want to have a little bit more discussion with yellow, or is there a stop everything, I got a problem with the unanimous package? Not the projects that had a majority vote that we will discuss later, like the C2C and the airport way.
So everything except airport way and C2C is
the entire package that's proposed by the steering committee. That's
the unanimous package, which is not
airport way.
Not airport way, not C2C,
yes.
Because they didn't achieve unanimous consent.
Okay, so those are pulled away from what we're voting on.
I need to review all my notes in order to determine how extensive my comments and concerns are.
I think your concerns were on those two projects, correct?
And those other components that we will still be continuing discussion around, racial equity and some of the other components that will be part of the unanimous consensus, we will still have discussion around those.
Okay. And we will have, again, a conversation when we're not in this fiscally unconstrained world, because that's not reality.
We don't know what reality is yet. All right.
So if we're leaving those out,
Okay, Bob, what issues do you got with the unanimous package that you would like further clarification on?
Is Sunrise part of the unanimous package?
Yes.
212, okay. Yeah.
Then I'm
the 212 corridor is,
okay,
yes.
Okay, so that's the difficulty here. I want to talk about elements of the package, and that includes some concerns about the Sunrise main stem recommendations of the task force. So I've got a yellow.
Yes. Okay. Good. We're good to go. The floor is yours.
Okay. Super. Had a speech.
It's just somewhere. We've got a graphic because we thought you might have questions. So I'm just asking Craig to pull it up. So
talk into it like this.
I go back to our three major principles: safety, equity leading with a racial equity lens, and climate. And the takeaway I have from the public hearing last night that's most compelling for me is the the witnessing by the young woman who was knocked from her bicycle and said, if I can relearn how to read after getting knocked over by a car, this council can learn how to make these projects and investments more safe, more equitable, and better for the climate. So even on the consensus description of Sunrise, I don't want to take this project out of the package, not at all. I support safety improvements for all modes. I support ensuring that there's a way that transit will be better served in that main stem Highway 212 corridor, the existing road. But that vote included some very confusing language. We've heard written testimony about it from the Getting There Together Coalition about just what the right-of-way acquisition is and how extensive it is and what its purposes would be. I, for one, will vote against a package that includes a bypass highway north of 212. There's a lot of right-of-way acquisition that could only serve that purpose, and I'm prepared to see a study for that corridor. That I think we can do that and accommodate the county's interests, the interests of those who support continuing analysis of a throughway, but I don't want to buy land for something that may not be built under the premise that we're buying land to make the 212 improvements possible. So I'd like to bifurcate that question. What land are we buying for what purpose with the right-of-way acquisition component? And would it be wiser to simply defer the right-of-way that is not integral to the 212 improvements but would be required only for the whole banana, the whole potato, the whole
enchilada
bypass? Enchilada, yeah.
I like potato.
Okay.
Better, yeah.
So I can, if you don't mind, speak to that a little bit. So big picture on what the vote was. The vote was a $180 million vote. The $130 million is for Highway 212, what is now called the Complete Street.
It's the green.
We call it the Green Project. And then $50 million of that was for project development for the Regional Connector Project. This is, frankly, the original kind of Sunrise Highway project that we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
When you break down that $130 million, there is $49 million for reconstruction of Highway 212. So there is a plan to move significant components of Highway 212, do a grade separation at 142nd, as well as rebuilding another intersection at 135th. As part of that $130 million, there is $72 million for right-of-way. My understanding in conversations with Clackamas County is that's buying 14 parcels, large parcels. We do not have an amount for right-of-way or reconstruction of what it would take not to buy that much right-of-way. I think what I'm hearing from you, I think, Councillor Stacey, is to work, or Metro staff, or directing Metro staff, to work with Clackamas County to figure out if all of the right-of-way is for Highway 212 reconstruction and how much is for the proposed Sunrise improvements.
That would satisfy my concern, and then we could vote on whether we want the whole potato or the 212.
We have is cost and numbers analysis on the whole potato, which is the green shaded at this time.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Councillor Lewis, I'm going to ask Councillor Lewis just to respond quickly since it's in your district.
Sure, and I think that the real importance is understanding that the Highway 212 component is about making real impact on a couple of dangerous intersections and non-intersection intersections. You've got an entire community that's separated from a school, and the only way to get to that school is car. I think we're going to be real problem solvers right away with the green component. But the blue box money, the $50 million that's forward-thinking planning, is about how do we get people through east to west in a part of Clackamas County that has no east-west connection. It's a challenge countywide, but particularly here with kind of the road of the future where the bus goes, on the road first. It's not the afterthought. which is why I think it's important that metro planning money is invested so that we have a complete forward-thinking picture and not, you know, happenstance happens and you build a little bit here and a little bit there and eventually you connect it and it's something. No, we're going to be planning for the transportation network of the future that East County needs.
And so the right-of-way, sorry.
I'm asking about is the right-of-way.
I can speak on a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's also in your district.
Sort of, yeah.
Kind of.
Or it used to be. And, I've had two presentations, and I think I understand that. So see with the Clackamas River right there?
Yeah.
It makes it, it's, the road is falling into the river.
Right.
They have big barriers there. So part of the right-of-way purchase is to move the road further north. Mm-hmm. So that away from the river.
I'm good with that.
And so that's part of what I understand part of the right-of-way
yes.
funding is to be able to do that.
But as one can see, the right-of-way goes all the way up the hill to obviously accommodate a future through route, a park-and-ride station, an odd, peculiar replacement of the existing access for the mobile home park residents by a loop-de-loop. I mean, there's a lot going on there that is not integral to the improvements on 212. And so I heard the Getting It Together Coalition ask for bifurcating, you know, how much of this is for improving 212 and how much of this is for the future improvements. I don't consider them improvements. That some characterize as a necessary east-west connection. I don't want to support the bypass. I do want to support the improvements to 212. And so the part of the green that does that, I'm good with.
Yeah, I think that's something we definitely need to clarify.
Right.
I don't have an answer for that. Yeah.
So in terms of questions today, which is I think where we're getting to, is clarification of the right-of-way. Now, what I will put on the table is that this part of the region has been, and those landowners have been waiting for a decision for over 30 years. And they don't know what to do with their properties. So they haven't done any industrial development because they're waiting for a decision. So helping get clarity on moving forward to me is important, but with criteria. And making sure that when we put our money into this part of the corridor that we're actually getting the outcomes later, could be another 10 years that we're actually getting the outcomes that we had intended. So let's put that on the table that it would be nice to get a decision and start moving a positive framework forward in this part of the region.
If I could remind all of us, we're being asked today to give direction to staff to move forward, including answering questions that we have about the package. I've stated my question as clearly as I can. I can't vote in favor of moving it forward without more information. I will not delay the obtaining that information by trying to stop this vote.
No.
But
But in terms of the right-of-way acquisition, that's all I'm talking about, that right-of-way acquisition that's not related to moving the road further from the river. I'm just saying it's an important part. And the question for me then is what are the criteria that we put on the project to make sure that we get the outcomes that we had expected in the future? So
I think we've got direction from you both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And just to remind council, I think that we also had a similar conversation around parallel to the enhanced transit corridor discussion is transit readiness. So I think that's one of the primary criteria that I'm interested in seeing as well to the safety improvements to the corridor.
And if I could reiterate one point I made during my rambling presentation, my concern, I support making sure that when we rebuild and relocate 212, that we include provision for good transit, whether that be an additional lane, transit priority treatments on A lane, any number of steps that can be taken to take what is a very busy roadway that serves a lot of purposes and make sure that through transit at higher volumes than the number 30 bus today can be well sustained on that stretch as well.
Good. All right. Is that clear enough?
Yes.
Clear as mud. Okay, so that, if that was the only issue that was raised with the unanimous package, or do we have...
I just want to be clear that I support that conversation and that work being continued to be done.
Yeah.
I appreciate and support the unanimous consent of the stakeholder group and the process that they went through to get to this point, but that does not mean that we don't need to still have a conversation. And frankly, I don't like the bypass component of this either. But I think that I do support moving forward with the risk analysis and the understanding about where the right-of-way and which right-of-way purchases are happening and also around the zoning and other components that would be part of this project.
Okay. Councillor Stacey.
I no longer recall, given my limited capacity apparently, whether Airport Way proposal was included in this motion. Okay.
Nope, we're going to be talking about that separately. Yeah. Any other concerns or additions? Yes.
I'm just going to say this a little bit to clear the air. I think that there has been an intense focus on land use on Sunrise, and I think land use is a challenge on many of the corridors. Many of these corridors are ODOT facilities and have developed without a comprehensive land use plan that really anticipates the uses that we're talking about. So while Sunrise is a good example for activists, I can go to Multnomah County and Washington County outside of my district and pick on some problem children as well. So if we're going to have the conversation about land use, can we please have it about a collection of roads that are deserving of that evaluation and
Amen.
Not just one?
Amen.
So I think what you're hearing loud and clear is land use discussion as you go forward with the development of the projects. What are the land use provisions that need to be put in?
I will have comments on that at the appropriate time as well.
Yeah, okay. Thanks.
So I think you've just given us direction to advance the vast majority of this package.
With the discussion
With the discussion we've heard and then the feedback we heard and the directive to staff. So
this is the success moment.
I want to say that's a very exciting moment.
I do have a question.
Oh.
So the question I had is the difference in the money that it will take. And I guess if we say yes, move forward, and the committee is asking us, what they're recommending, is it a higher amount than what the staff recommended? I would be hesitant in moving this forward if I knew that it would be challenging for us to get the support of the region. Can we financially make it work? That's the question I have. This package that costs more money, is it something that is still feasible and doable to get this the financial support of the region? I don't expect you to answer that now, but that is a question that I have about moving this at this point.
So we're scheduled to come to you on the 28th of this month to have the discussion around revenues tomorrow. Tuesday. Tomorrow night, we have our 17th task force meeting, and we will be asking for their feedback on revenue sources. And we'll bring that information to you, plus the Eco Northwest analysis and our polling information, to ask you for direction on narrowing the set of revenue sources to examine. And that's really the next conversation, is with that list of revenue sources. Yes, technically, it's feasible to fund this with the revenue sources that are available to you. The question is, how much support is there from the voters, and how much support can we get from our partners in the community, in the business world, and elsewhere for a suite of revenues to achieve that amount? Just that the high-level answer is, yes, it's still feasible to fund the revenue bonds to build projects at that scale within the $350 to $450 million estimate per year.
And all I would say is you're going to move forward with the local jurisdictions to develop the projects more specifically, and then as we know what we're coming into for how much the region is willing to spend, we can scale each corridor. And so that jurisdictions know that they're taking a risk to develop more than maybe we would be able to fund, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, our partners, we call them our stick, really, our core transportation partners are quite familiar. Many of them are in the room. Our project delivery partners attend every task force meeting, and they're quite familiar with the process. But, you know, I think they're all optimistic that their work is going to pay off. So I'd say yes and no.
Right.
The good news is we now, no matter what happens in the future, have a great pipeline of projects for Corridor that are going to be developed, whether we're pursuing regional funding, state funding, or federal funding. So that's what I tell our partners is keep up the good work, and that work will never be lost. We will use that. So that's...
But we are trying to get to a point over the next of the period of months where we have a close enough cost estimate that we think is realistic and that scales to the point in time that the project would be built, that a local jurisdiction could commit to build that and not fear greatly that the costs will go up or that we don't understand something. So that is the work that we've begun and will continue to do. So we're at a point where we can promise projects that we can deliver on time and on budget. But our local partners would be taking on the risk of committing to deliver those projects to the extent that we don't get that work right. It's why it's so important now to continue advancing the design and project for, cost work.
Yeah. I have one more question. If you don't mind, I'll ask another question then. The package is now taken on a couple trails, specific trails that we hadn't originally planned. We would consider the trolley trail, and I think pretty explicitly the Council Creek Trail, but obviously that parallels a road, so that's a little bit easier one to support with these funds. So I guess the question I want to ask is, so there's focus on Washington County. If we're talking about geographic distribution, focus on Washington County, focus on Clackamas County, but nothing came up about Multnomah County on any specific trail. So how would you respond to that?
Yeah, so one of the reasons we struggled a little bit from a staff perspective with trails was really how we thought and defined a corridor. And we wanted to be loose with it, but not so loose that the corridors were a mile wide, right? And so both for Council Creek Trail and Trolley Trail, they kind of fell within what was a reasonable definition of that corridor. For other jurisdictions, we didn't have trails that kind of just like Council Creek and TV Highway that were clearly parallel. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're proposing a program, the Active Transportation Regional Connections, that will allow for funding for trails that are not connected to a corridor. So it's simply about how corridors were defined.
Thank you. All right. So we're good? Green? Everybody green? No?
I think we have mostly
of moving forward to the next set of... Yeah.
Council Dixon. Okay.
Yeah. I think so.
You think so?
I listened to what Councillor Stacey has to say, and his objection is kind of to something that it was different. My point of view is different. My understanding of the recommendation from the task force was improvements to Highway 212 to make it a complete street, and I would agree with all of that. And if that means moving it in order to save it from the Clackamas River, that's a great idea. My understanding of the right-of-way, let me step back. And I also agree with the chunk of money, I think it's $50 million, to do study and planning and design, acknowledging that just improvements to the existing 212 may not be adequate for the future needs for that portion of the region as it grows. But if we were going to identify a chunk of money for right-of-way purchase, it's not with the assumption that what we see on this graphic is going to be what that right-of-way is, but it would be identifying and having a pot of money when that study and design has been done, that there would be a pot of money to begin purchase of right-of-way of whatever comes out of that study, not this. So we're not going to start buying right-of-way assuming that's where this is going to go. The majority of my understanding of what the right-of-way purchase was going to be was because we need to purchase right-of-way to make these complete street improvements to 212. So I would agree that we don't want to provide money that's going to start purchasing right-of-way for another alignment that we have not yet identified what it is.
My point exactly. You stated it more clearly.
Okay. So
I don't know if it's more clearly. It was just.
I guess the question to take back to Clackamas County is timing, and how to phase this in.
Timing, and I don't know the parcels well enough, the individual parcels, to see if you can, if you have to parcel the parcels to do this analysis. But I think your direction is clear, and we've got our work to do to better vet and understand what that right-of-way purchase, that $72 million, is going towards, and whether it can be more strategically honed in on Highway 212.
Okay.
With that general understanding of what this corridor would be funded, I'm totally agreeing.
Good. All right. Thank you. Ta-da!
Yay!
All right. Now to the fun stuff.
Do you want to?
So we had a formal recommendation.
Yes.
On Airport Way and 82nd.
20 votes for advancing Airport Way, and I think just 4 votes of concern. Margaret, do you want to?
Sure. I mean, again, overview of this project, I think you're all familiar, but this is proposing a grade separation in 82nd Avenue and Airport Way. Primary purpose of this is to reduce auto congestion, although it will have some other benefits. As Port of Portland has highlighted, they are dealing with increase of volume of congestion at this intersection. Dynamics, including the huge increase in Lyft and Uber riders, as well as increase from Clark County residents. So here is a picture. You'll see where it, I believe that's, is that eastbound on the left? You're blocking it. Eastbound, looking north on the left. And then in terms of traffic on the east-westbound will be better directed to the terminal. There will be crossings for bike and pedestrian access, and then as part of the task force agreement, the port agreed to lead the design on Alderwood Killingsworth Trail. And I'll tell you why it's important that agreement happened. We, as part of the package in the staff report, suggested funding the study of that trail for $500,000. But this idea of the Alderwood Killingsworth Trail has been around as long as I've been in the area doing transportation. It's highly complex because it's partly owned by ODOT, partly owned by PBOT, and partly owned by Port. And there's the ODOT section of it's very complex, going through underpasses. And so it's been caught in a bureaucratic triangle for many years. And so as part of the task force recommendation, the Port kind of raised its hand and said, you know what, we'll lead the design of this trail. And so that was part of the 75% recommendation going forward.
Awesome. So should we hold up cards? Where are we with this?
I have some questions.
Yeah.
But I was going to do this, and then if you have a yellow card, but,
okay.
You know, we don't have to be that bureaucratic, but I just want to find out where the questions are coming from. All right, everybody. Whew. All right, starting with Councillor Dirksen, we'll go around the table.
Thank you. My question, one question I have is that this $35 million investment is leveraging Port of Portland dollars. How many?
Yes.
What's our percentage of the total project?
Less than half. I'm looking up the exact number.
Our investment is less than half?
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
$87 million.
The total?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. One of the conversations that I've had with some of our other regional partners is, wouldn't you achieve the same thing, and it would be actually be better for transit if instead of grade separating the road, we grade separated the light rail line? But then that same group acknowledged that doing that would probably cost more than this because of the challenge of grade separating a rail line that would have to be longer because the grade has to be less, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that looking at the port as a good partner of ours here as well as other places lends me to be more accepting of this project. Other than that, I kind of scratched my head and said, of all the other things we could do in the region, this rises to this level of importance. But I recognize that this might actually be the cheaper solution on how to deal with a problem than one that folks who are more transit and bike and ped oriented would find appealing, but it'll accomplish the same thing for less, or at least much the same thing.
Right.
Great. And I think if I can, I will
take a minute to
address the grade separation issue, and we've got two Port of Portland experts here, so they can pipe up if I misspeak. But I know from the technical workshops we did that the port did look at the grade separation for the transit. But looking at that didn't really solve the problem that was presented. Yes, the cars have to stop for transit, but it's not the major thing causing congestion. The transit, by doing a grade separation, doesn't really improve. What really improves the transit is the Red Line Improvement Project, which is going to bring it from a single track to a double track. Yep. So you're not, by grade separating, you're not really getting an increase of transit benefit, and you're not solving the problem, which is primarily auto congestion. But the port has been incredibly collaborative with Metro, PBOT, and ODOT in looking on and vetting all those potential scenarios.
So we're going around the table. So, Councillor Chase.
Well, yeah. For me, it's not. I mean, there's a cost factor, but it may be that there could be alternatives, and if those alternatives address better our, you know, climate, equity, and safety goals, then that may be worth taking a look at. And I want to really understand better the concerns that were raised in, you know, from the folks that were not on board with this. And I feel like we've heard input, we've had some, but in terms of really some analysis and understanding about the how it impacts those three core goals for our work, I'd like to take some time to really make sure we're you know, hearing what that sort of minority of the task force really understanding those concerns, and really looking and doing some analysis that's a little more careful to make sure that we're really processing all of those concerns carefully.
So I'm just going to repeat what I heard, because I'm taking directions today. So I'm hearing kind of a need to further study climate, safety. Did you say equity?
Well, how does it meet our three goals?
Yeah. Three high-level goals.
And a little bit more analysis about the congestion relief and the analysis around. I mean, I feel like we are. Oh, it's going to relieve congestion, but we don't really have. I think just a deeper look on both of these projects, the other C2C, I feel like we have really relied on the task force to evaluate these carefully. And for me, these two, not having that level of support that we really wanted to see, is an indicator that we need to spend more time doing a little bit deeper analysis, and I'd like to learn and understand more. I've sat down and you know, understood and looked at these projects closely, but I think I would like more time to really evaluate and make sure I'm understanding all of those issues that were raised in the task force.
Great. I'll work with Anthony, and we've got Emerald and Sean in the audience from Port of Portland, and we'll take your direction and work on it and come back to you with some analysis and some more briefings.
Councilor Gonzalez.
Oh.
I don't know if I did.
Wow.
Nice.
I want to say something about potato, but I don't know what to say. Thank you for bringing this. My comments are echoed along the similar lines. I've learned a lot, you know, throughout my first year on council, and specifically learning about, you know, the variation between transit usage to the airport and also just the types of trips that people take in general, and the nature of accessing the airport and how people do that. I really want to go back to understanding the concerns more, evaluating the outcomes for this. I mean, I think applying the same level of scrutiny that we've applied to the Sunrise Corridor or the improvements to Highway 212 in terms of the micro data points of safety, you know, climate. When we're making that decision, really getting to know what the task force members are talking about a little bit more, you know. But for the most part, I do see a path where this corridor could be a part of the measure. Just personally sharing my viewpoint. I think that there's been a lot of work to get to a really good place, that the task force worked really hard with the trail. And so that's really it. Recognizing that, I mean, there's when presenting this corridor, I think it would be helpful to understand, you know, how many million more trips do we expect that at the port of at PDX over the next decade? You know, what do we forecast to be? And I know we have that information, but I think it's just important to describe that. How many people are inside the TriMet district? How many people come from Salem or Clark County? I mean, I know that, you know, I have family members and close family members that live in Salem, in a rural area, that really have no option, that are elder, that would need to drive and park at the airport. I think it's a necessity for some people, and denying that is just not, I think, realistic.
Councilor Craddock.
Yeah, I put a red for this project because I feel like it's a project that's taking us backwards and not forward. It's increasing. It's going to promote auto trips instead of reducing auto trips. It's going to promote more CO2 emissions. I was wondering if the port has looked at what else can they do to reduce auto trips. I recognize that Uber and Lyft have had significant impact on auto trips to the airport. And has the port looked at, I can sure, Councilor Stacey and I were discussing this last night. Obviously, all of us want.
Was I lobbying you, or were you lobbying me?
We all want to be sure we can get to our airplane on time, and so getting Uber is very important to the airport. But why is an Uber and a Lyft so important to be picked up in the front of the airport when you're leaving the airport? Why can't that be moved off-site the public then take a bus, a port bus, to where you're going to pick up Uber and Lyft? That would reduce auto trips. That's just me brainstorming, but my point is this is promoting auto trips and not reducing them. And by building this big piece of infrastructure, we know in the future that's going to be maxed out at some point, and they're going to need to build more infrastructure. So it seems like we're not really focusing on the real issue is what else can be done to reduce auto trips. And I know the port's struggling because the Uber and Lyft have had such a significant impact. And this is not supporting the direction we're going. This is not a project that fits what we're trying to accomplish.
So I'm going to try to capture the questioning and the work to be done. I think what I'm hearing from you and from prior conversations with Councillor Stacey is a taking a look at what I would call transportation demand management strategies at the Port of Portland. And those strategies could come in terms of thinking more about how you engage with TNCs to how transit connects. I do know that for the MAX line, the red line, MAX comes every 15 minutes, almost 24 hours, except between 2 and 4 in the morning, and then there's a bus line that comes during that hours. That said, right now, and I'm not sure TriMet is in the room, I don't want to speak for TriMet, but I know the bus connection there for the 272 to PDX line comes every hour, which is not frequent, right? So I'm not saying that is the solution, but I think you're right. What you're hitting on is maybe looking at some of the what I would consider transportation demand management strategies, whether it's how people get to and from the airport, where they get off, or how they connect with transit, bus transit in this case.
Councillor Stacey, do you want to add on to that, or Councillor Craddock, are you
yeah,
finished?
Piling
I'm sorry.
On now. Walter Robinson came up to me at the Harmony campus of Clackamas Community College at that workshop for the task force. Said, "So where are you on this?" Sort of pinning me to the wall. So I said through clenched teeth, "Look, my bottom line on this is we've only got one airport, and as Councillor Craddock said, you know, when it's 6 a.m. when I cheapskate, take the early flights, I call radio cab and I take a cab to the airport. No congestion then. And when I come home, I take the MAX. But there are a lot of people who can't do both of those things or either one of them. I understand that as well. And I know that our history of investing in transportation as a region, as a state, could be fairly characterized as doing mostly good and taking a little bit of what Tom McCall would call schlock along with the good. Two steps forward, one step back. What I heard last night from everybody but Alice, and she's only 8 years old and hasn't really had it sink into her that the world will change during her lifetime dramatically. But I heard it from the 20-somethings. We don't have time to take two steps forward and one step back on greenhouse gases. We don't have time to take two steps forward and one step back on equity and safety. So we have to use all the tools in our toolbox, not the one that builds a giant flyover, that adds road capacity for more car travel, that accommodates a cheap movement. You're coming from East Vancouver. You come across 205. You get on Airport Way. You go down to 82nd. You turn in, and then you find your way back to 84 to continue your trip across the region. It happens every morning. It happens every night. And that's a big problem for the port because it blocks a lot of airport-bound traffic. Let's do something about that cut-through traffic. I think this is a great opportunity for a targeted congestion pricing strategy. We know we're going to need congestion pricing at some point. We're not supposed to talk about it in the context of this measure for very obvious reasons, and I'll say them out loud if we need to. But I'm not going to vote for something that's half good and half baked anymore. I'm not going to be party to building capacity when we haven't looked at the full range of alternatives. The 82nd Avenue bus, the busiest, most productive bus in the city, turns at Killingsworth instead of going on into the terminal. You could get a whole bunch of working people to the airport and to the jobs along Airport Way by just taking the 82nd Avenue bus up and giving the Killingsworth bus another number. That's a second suggestion, along with Councillor Craddock's ideas about rearranging the trip movements for Uber and Lyft. Going from tepid supporter for this project to adamant opponent of a flyover for more cars has been hard for me. I still haven't absorbed all the impact of it, but I can't vote for this. I will not vote for this. We need to come up with a different package.
So I think what I've heard from your discussion is the continuation of the TDM. And to me, the acknowledgement that we have a larger regional issue that is coming up at the port with the through traffic that has nothing to do with the port,
right,
that's diversionary traffic,
right,
that we all need to just say, listen, we have a bigger issue and the port can't take that on by themselves. They've
right.
done a great job of moving forward on a regional issue with the trail, but if we're going to really work hand in hand with the port on a project, that we need to look at how what is the future for the diversionary traffic off of I-205 that they're trying to handle. And so I think that's really the question. We can't get into solutions here and design it. We all think we're traffic engineers.
No, I don't. I think you
are.
No.
And transit planners. And, but I think there's some things that we need to talk about for our future in order to deal with this larger issue. And the question is, how does that impact the project then? And maybe get some discussion around that. But I think that's what I'm hearing is more of a TDM strategy for the airport long term. That's a regional approach because it's a regional problem. It's not a port problem. Okay.
And I think my addition is that we keep talking about this being a broken intersection that's going to break doubly when we double track. And I think that there's a lot of confusion about what double tracking means and the timeline, and I just need to understand more of that. So I would love to have not quite the level of your technical workshop, but an evaluation of what was looked at, what was decided upon, how double tracking complicates that. And kind of, what the flow chart is. Do we have room to, not only have the conversation about port traffic, the 10,000 plus jobs right there, but also what we're going to do around that red line improvement generally.
Yeah, great. And I just, for clarification's sake, the red line improvement project is moving forward, and that's the effort to double track. And that is on its own separate timeline and should be, I believe, complete before funding even becomes available as part of this measure. What I can do is work with our partners at TriMet to come bring this council an update on the Red Line Improvement Project. They came to JPACT, I want to say, 6 months ago and gave an update. I thought it was very informative. Either that or we can do one-on-one briefings. Happy to provide that information.
Okay. So, summary of where you're going to go next on this project to bring back to us.
So I think the two buckets of direction. The first was a deeper analysis on our outcomes and our values, including climate, safety, and congestion relief, and really understanding how this project fares in that analysis, how it works in that analysis. And then a second bucket of analysis or coordination with the Port of Portland on transportation demand strategies that would complement this project or happen with a regional approach to TDM.
There's two different. One is how is TDM to the airport, and one is TDM regionally through this project area.
Correct. No.
I was going to say, I also heard more information around growth, expected growth of the airport, and understanding of congestion and the congestion relief nature, because those are two other values that were part of the task force and your value list. So we can do more analysis there.
And I lastly, I'll just add that as part of our congestion pricing study, which is separate, we are looking at a scenario that would identify areas of high VMT in the region, regardless of ownership. And this we could look at whether we could model this location or near this location on 82nd or Columbia. So I'll bring that back to our congestion pricing team as well. Thank you for that, Councilor Stacey.
I think what I also heard is the airport's important to this council.
Amen.
Okay. I want to be clear on that.
and to me, that means the port's opinion about what they need for the airport is important to me.
Is also important, yes. But having a holistic strategy and recognizing that they are trying to accomplish a lot in one intersection that has nothing to do with the airport itself is part and parcel of, I think, a more holistic discussion.
Right.
Okay. I just wanted to be very clear. Yes.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
I'd like to suggest, since this was one of the most popular bus trips during the LIT process, that potentially we revisit our hobby of getting on buses and do a study trip.
There you go.
I learned a lot on the ground, and this is one I didn't get on because there weren't enough seats on the bus. So.
There weren't enough seats
Not
on
enough
the bus.
Not enough seats for even me.
All right.
We could make that happen, I think.
Yeah, we can make that happen.
All right. Based on that, we can move forward with more work to be done. Okay. Next.
The last one. This is a project that was suggested for removal, the Clackamas to Columbia corridor. That did not get a majority support, that notion of removing it. So then we had dialogue and discussion. And when we got to a vote, we got a majority support, but not the 3/4 support required by the task force itself to make it a formal recommendation. So we're bringing it to you. Do you want to run through it? You're probably more capable of running through it than I am.
Just overview, just to remind everybody what CDC is. We call it the CDC, and sometimes it's CDC/181st. Here, this slide's focused on the connector road. Big picture, we're proposing to invest $150 million in the entire CDC. The CDC is the north-south connector between Happy Valley and the Columbia Corridor. CDC as a corridor is called out in the 2018 RTP as a key connector. I believe it's Mobility Corridor number 24, so it's in Chapter 8 of our RTP. For the total amount of $150 million for the full corridor, I just want to highlight that 41 to 62 million are going for safety. And that kind of stretch that jogs between 181st and then over to 190th, that is a high crash corridor. We're also proposing $15 to $20 million of enhanced transit on that piece. The connector road is estimated at between $40 and $54 million. I just want to say this was one of those projects where the technical workshops really paid off for us. When Metro first hosted our first technical workshop on C2C, we had Clackamas County, Gresham, and we actually had members from City of Portland in the room at the same time. And when the C2C connector road was first proposed to us, it was a plain four-lane roadway. We worked with them and worked with them, and they agreed to a two-lane roadway with a lot of complete streets improvements, with sidewalks, bikeways, crossings. So the connector that is being proposed today is much more in tune and in line with Metro's urban design guidelines than originally proposed. And I want to make sure that we know that as we're considering this connector as kind of, I would say at this point, kind of a standalone item. So with that, I'll let you guys discuss it.
I don't know if those of you remember the tour out in this area, but you get to a point where you could sort of look across a field. It's, you know, a farm field or an empty field, but it's an area we've identified.
That way,
yeah,
say,
look over that way out the window.
And
this is an area that we've identified in our growth plan for industrial and employment growth. And so it's meant to connect housing further south with jobs in that area in the future and also to jobs at the very north end of the entire corridor. So that was an aspect of what we learned on the tour itself. Do you want to also talk about the connectivity?
Yeah, I think the connectivity is important. And, in our climate smart strategy, when we analyze capacity, there's not a greenhouse gas benefit. But we have studied and modeled that in areas, especially areas that tend to lean suburban or rural, when you have a key connector road, that can have the potential to reduce VMT, especially for those single occupancy trips that are going farther around. I won't go as far as to say as a whole new roadways reduce VMT. I just want to be careful in my statements. But in general, key connectors is a benefit to the overall system.
So just to add to that, because as part of my work towards my PhD, I modeled connectivity within this area using Metro's model. the question to me is, do you want to be completely dependent on one or two future roadways like the Sunrise and I-205, or do you want to build out a local street connectivity for local trips to be able to access local jobs? Or do you want to continue to pile those trips like we did with 217, right? And then Washington County has been doing a great job trying to reconnect, but it has been a long road, literally, to start reconnecting bits and pieces of roadway to get that connectivity back so you're not completely dependent on 217 for north-south movement. So I think it behooves us to really think about this, because there's a really amazing case study in just Sunnyside Road was supposed to have a local road that was parallel to that was stopped by one property owner and one commissioner. And so we lack, just going even east-west along Sunnyside, any connectivity, and it's all piling onto Sunnyside. So I would just remind us that this decision is actually quite important, because it means you will then have a conversation in the future about widening of I-205 if we don't start to actually think about how we connect these roads further in and get those local trips off of what is the interstate. So it's an important decision, and I don't think that we're really have had a full conversation about the importance of, as we grow, how do we actually help provide that connectivity within this portion of the region. So I'll just add my two cents in that I would rather do this than see a proposal come forward in 5 years for more capacity on a future Sunrise and more capacity on I-205, which is going to be more expensive. A yellow and a yellow.
Are we looking for cards
no.
right now?
Go ahead. Just what are your issues?
Well, I was just, from my layman point of view, and from somebody who lives on the other side of the metro region, but looking at this, this is an opportunity to provide connectivity between two existing north-south routes that creates a unified route from the north clear to the south, and it provides that to an area as Happy Valley / Boring / Damascus, whatever it ends up being. It's going to be a major growth area over the next couple of decades, and it would provide direct connection west to 205, north to I-84. A question I have is, was there a discussion or a presentation at the task force about what advantage connecting these two roads together would have for opportunities for TriMet to provide improved transit north and south through this corridor? Councillor Stacey talks about the bus lane on 82nd Avenue being like the most heavily used in the region. Why? Because it's a single road that goes all the way from the north all the way to the south. Here we would have another one to the east of there that would accomplish the same thing for this huge growth area.
Correct. And I believe, and I'm going to try to get eye contact with Jeff. Okay, good. I believe 181st, this route, this bus line, is a very busy route, and it is something that is near frequent service but not quite frequent service and is slated for more stiff funding in the future. So that's just the existing roadway, and we believe when the connector is made, we haven't gotten that far because there hasn't been a decision on the connector, but then there would be an analysis of whether that line continues. Is that correct, Jeff? Okay, great.
So yes, bus
service is very important in this corridor.
Sidewalks, bikeways.
Oh, and sidewalks and bikeways and complete
well,
streets.
Well, sure. There's an assumption here in all these corridors that we're going to turn these all into complete streets that have all the different mode shares. Sure.
Yeah. The majority, basically, every project except for Sunrise at this point, we are investing ETC improvements in something that is already a frequent bus service or near frequent bus service, and this is one that's getting close, which is pretty exciting.
I have a comment, but I can wait till after the vote if you want.
Oh, that's okay. Councillor Stacey, and then Councillor Gonzalez? Okay, no.
I think at this stage I'm piling on. Councillor Dirksen said some of the things I wanted to say. I think it's very pleasing to me that Happy Valley has embarked upon an urban renewal district to provide resources for the appropriate development of East Happy Valley. That's the name I'm landing on, Craig, for that ambiguous history. East Happy Valley, the other side of 172nd, deserves to have a linear network of streets that serve development within that emerging set of homes and businesses that connects to 172nd so that there is a grid that can support good urban development, and it deserves to have a north-south frequent service bus. The 181st line could continue down, go through South Gresham on 190th and come out onto 172nd and make that very strong and important connection that Craig spoke to. So I'm good with those kinds of clarifications. I'd like to see us provide the resources that Happy Valley could use for that planning effort to ensure that that it can carry out those objectives and to attach whatever strings are appropriate to ensure that we get serious consideration of a grid network of streets to serve good, walkable, and bikeable, and transit-accessible development.
So we talked about this prior, and I think what I'm hearing is kind of a small sub-area corridor plan that goes along with it for the land use so that we're supporting Happy Valley's efforts. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
So we're supporting them, we're moving it forward, and it helps answer the land use portion and connection to this, how we're going to utilize the investment for the future to get the density and transit ridership.
Right. So I think I've understood your direction on this. Just a clarification point. Do you want to see that funding for that work reflected in the package as part of the Metro Council?
I think
or
that
would you rather have us kind of work that out in other means?
Yeah. You had mentioned a 2040 growth like grant.
That's another possibility.
But I want to make sure that we aren't, A, earmarking something that we haven't gone through a process for, and, two, if we really, really want this and we want the project to work, it should be in the package. So that I think that's what we were talking about. So
yeah, I'd like the time to kind of talk with our 2040
yep.
team and Alyssa to try to think of the best way to go here.
So okay.
Give us some time and we'll come
yep.
back to you with the proposal.
Yep.
Okay.
Councilor Lewis?
To that point exactly, I think that there are already some planning processes in motion and there's already some community advisory groups, particularly for the Carver area. And I want to actually make sure that all of council is aware of some of their good work before we think that we have answers that they may already have generated some of themselves. Can we hold them to it? Can we help resource? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But when I look at Happy Valley and Gresham and they're in a delicate dance right now, I think our role is to say, let's make sure this field doesn't literally become, you know, the gulf between you and make sure that we have the connectivity and the forward-thinking transit-oriented planning in addition to some of the density and affordability conversations the communities have had themselves.
Okay. So come back with a recommendation. Councilor Gonzalez, and then Councilor Craddock, and then Councilor Chase.
Thank you, President Peterson. You stole the words out of my mouth when I was going to talk about this corridor. I really think it's important. I was going to rise up my yellow card because in order to support the project, I think connectivity is important, but those strings around land use and transit-oriented development, transit readiness are so important. You know, but at the end of the day, I think that if those things included, this could be a very important project for the region. I don't want, you know, this part of the a very fast-growing part of the region to grow up around a facility like TV Highway that has inadequate sidewalks, inadequate bikeways, inadequate access to transit, and really the true cost that has on the communities that border that corridor. If we have the opportunity to really, one, get in the planning phase, and I think for a lot of these corridors that we have raised yellow cards or raised concern about, the value of coming in early around the planning so that we're able to add those stipulations and really, you know, work collaboratively with our jurisdictions, I think there's real value in that. That is really important as our region continues to grow. So just echoing what everyone has said.
Good. Councilor Craddock.
Thank you. Question. Has there been any way, or I don't know if we can even do this right now, to measure VMT? Because right now, if speaking to Council President Peterson's comments about connectivity, when I head north on 172nd to get to my house, it's quite a convoluted route that I have to take to get there. And having a direct route, having that connector there really, I would think, would reduce the miles that I would be driving. So I don't know if you are able or can or really to look at it.
We can look at that. I know we worked with Research Center to do some kind of initial modeling of the whole package, but it was hard in the model to separate C2C from Sunrise if you modeled them at the same time. So I would have to go back to the research team and see if we could get granular enough. It could be, rather than a model run, more just a technical analysis. So let me work on that. I think that's another point of direction of would this reduce VMT? I think for some trips, yes, but it would be a question of like how many trips. And
I think the more important question is how we are asking people and what choices we're giving people in the region to move around for local trips.
Yeah.
And if we're forcing them all onto an interstate, right, then that means that they really only have their car as a choice.
Yeah.
And so it's maybe a lot less about VMT and a lot more about provision of choice. And right now that choice is really hard in that corridor, and especially to grow. So I think that's where it comes down for me, is less about VMT and more about how do you allow local trips on a local system that has more safety for all modes.
And I do, somebody mentioned planning, so I just want to make sure I say that there was a robust planning process. I believe Brian Monberg's in the room from Gresham led it, as well as Clackamas County and Multnomah County. They came and presented their findings to TPAC, which informed the RTP description. So this corridor has had quite a bit of analysis and planning done on it. I don't have the breakdown of types of trips on my fingertips right now, but I know that information is available due to the good planning work that has already been done.
Can I make one more comment?
Yeah.
And the one thing that has not been pointed out or emphasized here is that this is a connection to the airport. 181st and Airport Way are the same road. You get to Stanley Boulevard, 181st becomes Airport Way. And so I don't think we've taken that into consideration in this discussion.
More access to the same problem intersection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, it goes around that.
Oh, it goes around it, okay. Yes, Councillor Chase and then Councillor Dirksmian.
Well, so, you know, I go back to kind of our original objectives with this work and with the task force recommendations, and I think that, you know, this is a difficult one because I think there are a lot of really good arguments around the connectivity. I think there are a lot of really good arguments about whether or not this really addresses the core goals that we've outlined, and I think that was thoroughly vetted with the task force recommendations. And so I go back to those objectives where we were looking for enough agreement to move these projects forward. And on top of that, I look back at the funding objectives that we have in terms of saying, you know, we have a limit around how much we want to propose here in projects, and we've already gone above that. Originally, I think we're really taking a perspective if we're going to add, you know, projects to the table, which the task force did, we need to take projects off. That was one of the objectives. The other was to really get, you know, 75% of the task force recommendations to move forward. So when we are adding a project, we're also creating pressure on our overall ability. There's going to be a lot on the ballot. We are making tough decisions. I mean, we have tough decisions to make. There are a lot of projects that aren't even being considered here. So for me, this is something that would then also affect our program budgets and our buckets for the programs and how much resource we can allocate towards those. So this just doesn't, to me, fit the criteria. It just doesn't feel ready for us to step in and take a different direction than where we really set out to go with the task force recommendations and within the budget that we targeted to move this forward. So I just feel like this is a project that, while I think there are many good arguments to be made for this project, I feel like we have to make tough decisions about what we can keep on the table or not. And, you know, frankly, out of how many projects do we have?
13.
Yeah, if one of them...
More than 150 projects.
150 projects.
Yeah, in the 13 corridors.
13 corridors. If we are adding a substantial number of components that bring up the resource overall from where we were with staff recommendations, I think it's appropriate that one out of 13 is not included in our package. And so, it's not to even argue against this project per se over the long term, but I don't feel like it's ready to be part of this package.
So just to clarify, we never, as a council, put a cap on anything yet, correct? So the staff recommendation was based on what you had heard and a conservative, knowing full well that there would be a little bit of growth. But we, as a council, have never talked about a cap because we haven't had the revenue discussion yet. So I just want to be clear that we did not give direction to the task force, nor did we give direction to ourselves to cap anything and say anything above this or below this line doesn't move forward. Just to clarify.
Well, I do remember proposing, you know, resources for certain projects that I thought could use more investment, and part of the argument was, well, if we are going to add to this, we should take from others. And so maybe it's my own interpretation
and
my own perspective on it, But those were conversations that I had.
I don't remember having that. So
I feel like there is only the appetite that we have has to match what the voters are willing to move forward. And I want to move projects forward that have that level of support.
Yes.
That, you know, 75 or more, to me, feels like a very good place to land in terms of the consensus of our task force recommendations.
So what I'm,
I just feel like this is not ready to be part of the package.
So what I'm hearing from you, because I just want to be clear, is that when we have the revenue discussion and we do the polling and we hear from all of our stakeholders and we come up with a number, this would be a project that you would not move forward.
This is
depending on if there's
now we're giving. I mean, right now we're giving our sort of feel for things.
No, I'm just trying to get a gauge. It's as we move along in the process. This one is a question for you.
Definitely.
Okay, that's all. All right.
First.
Yeah.
Thank you. There was a lot of discussion about opportunities in this area around local connectivity and land use planning and all those things. Mm-hmm. I got the impression that that was built on the idea that if this connector is created, then it generates a lot of opportunities for improvements in planning and land use and everything in this region, in that area.
Yeah.
But that's predicated on the assumption that this project is done. So I just want to say I'm much in support of this project. I think it's going to be important to that part of the region going forward so that transportation is adequate for that area. My colleagues talk about our underlying goals behind this and the three goals of climate, safety, and equity. All of those are very important. But I think there's another goal that we don't articulate very much. I don't know whether that's because it's an overarching goal, it's a given, or whether we've lost sight of that. And that's the fact that this package of projects needs to make our transportation system better. And people in November, when they're going to vote on this and their pencil is hovered over yes or no, they're going to be asking themselves, if I vote yes on this, is it going to make my commute better, faster, safer, yes or no? And if they can't say yes, they're going to vote no. So we need to make sure that the majority of the people in the region recognize that they're going to see benefit from this and that it has to make our transportation system better and work and function better, the entire system. No matter what your mode is, you're going to have to ask yourself, is this going to make my daily commute better?
Yeah. Good point. So Councillor Craddock.
I don't think this was an add-on project, though. This was in the original BRIC request. Am I correct?
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
And it was in the original staff recommendation after several technical
workshops.
And this
workshops. Is part of the special connection plan, the original
correct.
Thoughts and beginnings of this. Mm-hmm. So this project is it's not new.
It is far from new. It's been identified in the 2014 RTP as well as the 2018 RTP. The planning work was funded by an ODOT TGM grant, and that work took over 2 years. So this idea has been around for a long time.
Yeah, to be clear, it has been here from the beginning. Other components were added, as we saw in the presentation, around planning for sunrise and some of the
safety transit
and the trail work. So there's other areas where the budget has been increased. But this of course has been in the package since the beginning.
So I just wanted to point out, and I know it's a kind of a duh moment, but I mean really what we're struggling through here is how to maximize out our existing infrastructure and how to grow the region at the same time. And so those types of projects both are important, and it was a conversation that we had at the very beginning of this entire process is how do you show both where we're growing, how we're growing, and make the investments in that, as well as take care of the infrastructure that we haven't taken care of as we grow. So this is a good conversation, and I appreciate all of the thoughts. And we're not going to be able to get, answers on every single thing, and we may not make everybody totally feel 100%, but let's try and get to, 80%, 85%, because there's no perfect. But we can try and move the region forward. And as Councillor Stacey said, I think we should be moving forward. We shouldn't be taking any steps back. But every project in here, I think, is important. And it made its way up to the top because it is important. So figuring out a way through, I think, is going to be our next step, is how do we actually make this get to that 80% that we feel like it's better than good, and we can't get to great because great means that we actually tip over the apple cart in terms of costs, but we're moving the region forward, and I think that's the objective here. And I'm just going to look around the table. How are we doing? Anybody need to get anything else on the table before we move on? Councillor Stacey.
Sort of lost my stuff when I was talking about the airport project.
Oh.
I just want to clarify. I support getting people to the airport and getting people to the jobs in the airport vicinity, and I want to do it in the least disruptive way possible, ideally without adding capacity for single-occupant vehicles. Not to choke the airport, not to deny the economic opportunities that many people seek in that area of the region. So, for the record, I'm supportive of access to the airport. I don't like the flyover because of the induced demand that almost always accompanies expansion of capacity.
Okay.
Me too.
Sorry.
To summarize what
I heard. Doesn't add lanes. It's grade separates existing lanes.
Oh, okay.
To get through a congested intersection and put more cars through that point, and that's the definition of additional capacity.
And more trains.
Yeah, the trains will go through. I'm also interested in the question of whether taking the trains over. I understand it's very late in that ballgame, is a more cost-effective approach, but it doesn't solve the entire problem of that congested intersection, which does depend upon dealing with the regional travel that uses it as a convenient bypass for other major highways.
Okay. Anything else?
Right. Can I wrap up the direction on CDC real quick? So what I heard loud and clear is there is an interest in a land use analysis, kind of a 2040 type of grant look at the
to
area.
To supplement whatever is necessary in that quarter that's not already going on.
Right, and to kind of assess current land use efforts going on. And the second is to make sure that when we build a new connector that it's a transit-ready connector and supports the existing line that runs north-south on this corridor. Lastly, I just want to add that when the funding becomes available, we will not be able to construct all of these projects at the same time. Anthony has done a lot of work.
Really?
Hopefully we can build them in 10 years, but even that is kind of optimistic. And so if we need to program this and in terms of year of expenditure and year of construction to do the planning work that is needed beforehand, we can do that. So I just want to add that to the conversation.
Good. Thank you. Thanks for that clarification. Andy?
So thank you for all of that direction. Incredibly helpful. Just a look at what is to come. So we had the hearing last night, council direction today to further examine and bring you back data on many of these projects and hone the cost estimates. We're coming back to you on the 28th to talk about revenue mechanisms after talking with our task force tomorrow night. We're really looking for sort of almost like a focus group level of feedback from the task force, and we'll bring that information to you and then seek your direction in narrowing what revenue sources to focus on so we can do further analysis and have dialogue with folks who those revenues would impact and talk about rate levels, et cetera. So rather than starting, rather than doing that work with eight revenue sources, try to get a narrower list to focus on. In February, we are planning program-related workshops. So back to the board over here, the region-wide programs, where we are looking to engage folks. I've been working with a number of organizations to prepare for that. You'll recall we funded four organizations specifically to bring different voices into the dialogue. So we're working on, a lot of staff are working on preparing for those workshops and engagement around that. That will inform a staff recommendation eventually to the council around the programs, and then a month or so of discussion with you about appropriate sizing and scaling of those programs, budgets, impacts, all those kinds of things. And so April up there is a time to get program direction from the from you. We will bring that back to the task force, but we're looking to the council at this point for the firm direction on program size, scope, et cetera. And then later in spring, late April, May, we're getting into finalizing ballot measure language, ballot measure title. We have been having a series of discussions with our attorneys and others about the potential structure of the measure, ways to approach various portions of what gets referred, what gets put into metro law, metro legislation, et cetera. We need to work on oversight and accountability mechanisms, as we have with our last two ballot measures, make sure we've got the right structures in place that speak to all of our constituents and they can see themselves having a role in overseeing and the work and making sure the metro is being held accountable to the commitments that we make to the voters. And then, of course, we're looking to, at the moment, late May for a referral decision. So any questions about the timeline coming?
It's all very clear.
Yeah. A lot of we've passed an enormous milestone with the task force recommendations and your direction, but there is a lot more work to do.
Great. Thank you so much for everything to date and moving forward. Let's get moving.
Let's get moving.
Is this an appropriate moment to acknowledge the work of both of our presenters and all the staff who've supported us to this point? It's remarkable that we're here more or less on time and given a harrowing and hair-raising journey, I'm in awe of the contribution that you two have made and that everybody supporting your work has made to this process. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to all the staff, local district staff.
All right. Thank you. Moving on. Mr. Scott.
Nothing today?
Councilor Communications? Are we all talked out?
We had a public hearing last night.
Yeah, we went to a big hearing last night.
It's pretty cool.
All right. The only thing I would add before we adjourn is I think most of us are going to be at the Scanner MLK breakfast on the 20th at 8:30 a.m. over here at the Convention Center. So see you there.
See you again.
The MLK Scanner breakfast, yeah.
I had to excuse myself from the table, Madam President. I have a family engagement in the Seattle area.
Okay. Awesome.
I will also not be there. I'll be in Eugene chaperoning a volleyball team.
Wow.
Yes.
All right.
I love it.
Go do that.
I love it. That's great.
With that, we are adjourned.
All your
ball out.
Like a high school team or a club? High school. Yeah. Or just 25.